I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection for Friday, January 23rd. I want to welcome all who are here today. We will be starting out with an informational meeting with a presentation from the Department of Justice on the distribution of recalled children products and in reference to a bill that we passed last February. And then we will get into the public hearing right after that. So that will be sort of our agenda, and I assume we probably have a few people to testify today, so we'll take a look at how big that list is and let you know how much time you're going to get before I cut you off in a polite way. So with that, I'd like to bring up the Department of Justice, Andrew Scholl, and Keith Dubanovich. It'll take me a couple of times.
Kids got all those toys.
Chair Holvey,
and those toys are not for you.
I think I don't want them. They look too dangerous.
Wow. So thank you. If you would introduce yourself for the record and you know, kind of give us an overview of children's products in the state of Oregon, I guess, in relationship to the bill we passed, and maybe enlighten us a little bit about the our federal partners and what they are doing in this arena as well. It might be helpful for some of us. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, Keith Dubanovich, Special Counsel to the Attorney General. With me is Andrew Scholl, Assistant Attorney General. As I mentioned to the committee when I was here, I guess it was a couple of days ago, consumer issues are obviously very important to the department, and Mr. Scholl will directly address the bill that you passed last session and what we have done to put it into application.
Thank you. Chair Holvey, as Mr. Dubanovich mentioned, Andrew Scholl, Financial Fraud, Consumer Protection Section of Oregon Department of Justice. As you mentioned, we're here for House Bill 3631-2008. For new members on the committee, it was, as I recall, a bill that actually came from this committee in its interim form. And in a nutshell, it closed a loophole that many of us perceived in Oregon law, which is very simple, that now under House Bill 3631, you cannot sell a recalled children's product. It's a violation of law. The law also prohibits the sale of children's products which are subject to specific warnings, and these warnings are defined. They're warnings that have to come from manufacturers directly to the retailers, and they have to indicate that the intended use for the product, the children's product, is actually hazardous in and of itself. So under those warnings, the retailer gets direct notice from the manufacturer, and they can take them off the shelf, or sometimes they come with remediation instructions, and so they can fix the problem and keep them on the shelf. And the other item that's prohibited to sell under the House Bill 3631 is anything that's subject to a declaration by the Director of Human Resources and has been deemed basically to be a hazardous substance in and of itself. Again, that falls under the children's products definition. The law is enforced by through the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, so it can be enforced as a civil action, not criminal, by the Attorney General. It also contained a restricted private right of action. Also in the law, which is the reason we're here today, was a mandate that the Attorney General assist retailers in helping those retailers arrange or set up how to get recalls from the United States Consumer Protection, or the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission. And as part of that mandate specifically, we had to do certain things on our internet homepage. So I'm here to report that as of spring 2008, the Attorney General's homepage now contains a link that says learn about child product safety. That link takes you to a subpage, and at the top of the subpage is an immediate link to the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission. Sorry, I say consumer protection all day. The Consumer Product Safety Commission. And this link takes you to the homepage already set up by the Federal Consumer Product Safety Commission. Now, at the homepage of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, there is almost dead center a bright yellow box. That bright yellow box essentially says, sign up for email announcements, and the subtext is, get free recall and safety news emails here. And you sign up for free. It's a short process. I have signed up. Once you have signed up, you get essentially real-time product recall announcements from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. These average anywhere from 2 to 12 in a 1 week or 10-day period. That's for essentially all consumer product recalls that the Consumer Product Safety Commission oversees or has jurisdiction over. I can tell you now that anywhere from a fifth to a half of those would be deemed or could be deemed as children's products under House Bill 3631. Back to the Attorney General subpage. We provide, in addition to the link to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, a outline of some specific information for both consumers and businesses, and contained in the information for the businesses is another direct link to the Consumer Product Safety Commission for convenience as businesses are reading that text. In addition to these internet mandates, we also have the Attorney General's Consumer Hotline, which is available, has been available, continues to be available for both businesses and consumers. And this is important for folks that don't have internet or email access. They can call the Consumer Hotline. It's staffed by great volunteers, and they can provide the telephone information to receive these recalls directly from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They actually have a telephone line set up for that purpose, again, for those that don't have email or internet access. Last on compliance, we have the Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section Public Information Officer, Jan Margosian, who some of you know. She, along with other staff, are available for businesses, private bar, legislators, and legislative staff, and we regularly have contacts with them regarding various issues surrounding the sale of recalled children's products. Now, if the chair would like, I could also give a brief oversight of enforcement since the bill went into effect.
Yeah, that would be helpful, I think, just for our knowledge. And when did the bill go into effect?
The bill was signed into law in March 2008, and I believe there were some different effective dates, but shortly thereafter, it essentially went into effect.
Okay, so not that long.
Not that long, and this is how short the enforcement piece of this is. We have not received a single complaint from a consumer or a business about the sale of a recalled product in the state of Oregon since the bill went into effect, which is a good sign. The goal to keep the hazardous toys out of children's hands, of course, being the end goal.
So, Mr. Scholl, I assume that you have had, as you described, some outreach with businesses informing them of this new law and doing that outreach to the business community to help them get on board with this. And so do you think the reception of your efforts in that outreach have been received with maybe not enthusiasm, but received well?
Chair Holvey, yeah, I think the fact that we haven't received any complaints is a testament not only to outreach and the program and the publicity that the legislation got in the first place, but also to the Oregon business community.
Great, thank you. I was going to have you speak a little bit about the federal Consumer Product Safety Act of 2008. It's been in the news a little bit and I've received some calls about it, and of course I love to refer things to the federal government sometimes, but certainly we do want to have a concern, you know, about our business climate here, and have you had much discourse with the business community on this particular issue?
Chair
Maybe
Holvey.
You can describe it for the committee as well.
Absolutely, Chair Holvey, and I'll back up a little bit. Also, as part of the enforcement piece in the written testimony, you'll see that in coordination with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section investigators actually coordinate and perform what are called recall checks within Oregon, essentially to ensure that certain recalled items aren't being offered for sale in the state of Oregon. This sometimes includes children's products, not always. Take, for example, there'll be a particularly hazardous product that's been recalled, and stores that previously sold that product will actually be visited to determine that the products have been removed from shelves and aren't being provided to consumers. And on that note, I can certainly give you a brief informational on the federal law. As you said, in summer 2008, shortly after House Bill 3631 took effect, Congress passed the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. You'll see a cite to that in your written testimony. Requirements of the new law begin to take effect next month. February 10th, I think, is the date, and I've heard it in the news and seen it in the media as well. The federal law sets new standards, particularly for children's products, regarding allowable levels of lead and phthalates in products. And to give you an example, products containing more than 600 parts per million of lead will be banned in the United States after February 10, 2009. The allowable level will decrease over the next 3 years down to as low as 100 parts per million. That comes with a caveat. If the Consumer Product Safety Commission determines that that's just not technologically feasible, the 100 parts per million mandate will never be instituted. Along the lines, or along with the federal standards, the new law also creates new federal testing requirements for products, which is part of what's been in the news lately. The CPSC also closes the perceived loophole that House Bill 3631 was after. It essentially generally makes the sale of recalled products a violation of law. And there is an enforcement provision for state attorneys general in federal court. And Mr. Dabanovich can actually speak a little more to that.
Chair Holvey, as I said, the first thing that I, when I came to this committee a couple of days ago, and as I said this morning or this afternoon, obviously consumer protection is important to the Department of Justice, and if there is a consumer that we need to protect more than any others, it's the children. And while we do not write federal law, nor do we issue regulations from the CPSC, we have the duty to enforce those. And so to the extent that those regulations remain on the books, we will certainly enforce them. And if it is indeed the decision of the U.S. Congress and the CPSC that making sure that toys in the United States do not contain any lead or, and I probably can't pronounce this correct, phthalates, well, then it's our duty to make sure that no toys in the United States contain those. I would like to add, if I can, two things that Mr. Scholl is probably too shy to mention, and that's because his group did such a tremendous job, and that is a settlement that they obtained with Mattel and Fisher-Price. In conjunction with a number of other attorneys general around the country, we were able to obtain a stipulated general judgment, which resulted in a recall of more than a million toys that contained lead paint. So as you can imagine, the section is very acutely aware of the issues involving lead in children's toys, and we're actively involved in pursuit of the enforcement of the applicable rules and regulations.
And Chair Holvey, along those same lines, well, House Bill 3631 wasn't in effect to have any bearing on the Mattel Fisher-Price matter. Will the new federal law does not preempt House Bill 3631. So in its simplest form, the sale of recalled children's products where there are violations going forward will generally continue to enforce the state law aggressively and do so in state court.
Thank you. I'm certainly glad the federal government was paying attention to us. Representative Riley, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the fact that there had been no complaints since that went into effect, and I was curious how that compares to prior complaints.
Chair Holvey, Representative Riley, I could get you actual numbers, but I can tell you that I don't know that complaints on this topic were ever extraordinarily voluminous. But we will get you numbers in terms of 2007 and 2006 and some other prior years for essentially, you know, dangerous children, complaints about dangerous children's products on the market.
That would be great. Thank you.
If I can add, Chair Holvey, Representative Riley, I think one of the reasons that we wouldn't have had many complaints on this in the past was that consumers wouldn't have been aware that a toy had been recalled. So as a consequence of your work, they're now aware of what's been recalled, and if they purchased a product and happen to either click on our website or their CPSC website, they'd be able to now find that out so that they could then raise a complaint with us.
Follow up. That bothers me a little bit because I think it's highly unlikely that would have accidentally happened, that they clicked on your website and saw that toy had been recalled. I suspect even with, you know, what we've done, that the knowledge is not out there that anyone could find out what toys have been recalled. And I think we need to make some more effort to make sure that people know that these toys have been recalled, because you won't get any complaints. Nobody knows. That's my opinion. I just wanted to throw that out.
Representative Holvey, Chair Holvey, Representative Riley, you're absolutely right. I think it's a two-part approach. We have to make sure that the toys that are recalled are off the shelves,
yes,
so that no one can accidentally purchase a dangerous toy.
Right.
And secondarily, for those folks that already have acquired a toy that's being recalled, we need to make sure that they are on notice that they should return the toy to where they purchased it or send it back to the manufacturer. And that is a very important function that we have.
Can I have one more follow-up?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got a phone call last week. Actually, my wife got it. It was a recording from a store, was Costco, saying that we had purchased some health bars with peanut butter, which had been, you know, these bars had been recalled. We got a phone call telling us that they'd been recalled. I know how they did it. We're members. It's a membership store. But a lot of stores know what their customers buy, frankly. And most of us maybe don't know that, but the stores know who it is and what they bought. If we use credit cards, if we use the little thing that gets us a discount, they know what we bought. Maybe that's something that we could pursue, is getting those stores that know that a recalled toy or anything has been recalled to notify their customers that purchased it.
Representative Holvey, Chair Holvey, Representative Riley, I think it's a great idea. I would be cautious, however, to impose a burden on a small retailer to try and have to track down all of their customers. But certainly companies that have electronic databases of their customers, like Costco, I'm a Costco member as well, they can easily identify who's purchased the peanut butter, and I think I got the same notice you did.
Okay.
Obviously, I didn't buy my peanut butter at Costco, but maybe I should. Any other questions for the Department of Justice while they're here? Gentlemen, I thank you very much for spending a little time with us this afternoon, and I'm sure we'll be talking more to you as we try to wade through some of the issues around consumer protection and children products especially. And we try to figure out the best way to protect people, and I thank Representative Riley for bringing up that point that we did talk about in February, is how will people know that they need to to check up on the products they're buying and their impacts to their children especially. But and I see the media is here, so certainly they can help in that effort as well.
And Chair Hulvey, on that note, the Consumer Product Safety Commission and manufacturers, to the extent that they can, do take steps to notify consumers. Obviously, there's a heavy reliance on media and outlets like ours. We post children products recalls now on our website directly. And I want to emphasize that it's one of the reasons that the automatic notification is so great for the Consumer Consumer Product Safety Commission, because we try to encourage as many people as we can to sign up on the emails. If you're not getting them, you should get them. It covers all products that they have jurisdiction over, and often it's the only time I hear about a product in my household that's been recalled and that is hazardous.
Well, I look forward to our op-ed coming up soon, huh? So, with that, no other questions for them. I, again, thank you, and appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
With that, committee, I think that kind of lays the groundwork for some of the work that we're going to be looking at this session. Some issues where we do have the ability to step in this arena, and also we have our federal partners that are looking at these issues too, and certainly we don't need redundancy, but we do need to make sure our goals are met. And one of our goals that I think is being considered at the federal level with the extraordinary work from our own Oregon State Fire Marshal's office is the issue of novelty lighters. And it's an issue that the State Fire Marshal talked to me about a year ago, I believe, or maybe a little more than a year ago, and started this conversation. And some of you will remember we've had interim meeting on this particular issue as well. And I'm really excited that we're going to take a look at this potential legislation at further protecting children from dangerous products. And with that, I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2365 and call up my list, Judy Okolich, I believe. And Tim Burr, and our new Acting State Fire Marshal, Randy Simpson. And I appreciate, I just kind of heard my cell phone go off a few minutes ago, and I always reprimand people for having their cell phones on, and I usually start out by reprimanding myself because I forget as well. The cell phones and Blackberries and all those things that are on really interfere with our electronics up here, so I'd appreciate you turning them off unless you have some sort of emergency duty that you need to leave yours on. I suppose I'll give you that decision-making process yourself. So with that, please introduce yourself for the record, and welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hulvey, committee members. I'm Randy Simpson, the Acting State Fire Marshal, and we're here at the Fire Marshal's office appearing for in support of House Bill 2365. And as we go through our testimony today, I'd first like to start with Tim Burr, the chair of the Oregon Fire Safety Coalition, a group that we work with, citizens and other industry members of the fire service. And then we'll go through with Judy Okolich, and I'll finish up.
Dr. Burr. Chair Hulvey, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Tim Burr, and for the record, I reside at 12070 Southwest Fisher Road in Tigard. I am a 30-year veteran of the Oregon Fire Service. I divided my time between the Eugene Fire Department, where I began my career, and I retired about 5 years ago as a division chief at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. As a result of my experiences as a firefighter, I have opted in my retirement to continue to be an active member of the Oregon Fire Safety Coalition, in which capacity I appear before you here today. I would like to open this with a very brief anecdote. This is a tale that we shared with this committee during the legislative interim, but I know that there have been some changes in the composition of it. So this may explain in part why I have so much energy on this issue. On the afternoon of January 12, 2000, I was working in my office at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue Headquarters when a call was dispatched reporting a house fire in the northern part of our district, and further information was developed that there was a possibility of children being trapped in the house. My office was next to Fire Chief Jeff Johnson's office. He called out to me that he was going to respond to the fire and did I want to go with him, and I said absolutely. He jumped into his vehicle. With the benefit of lights and siren, we arrived there within literally just a few minutes. As we arrived, we encountered a burning home. There were two small boys that were being carried from the backyard to the front yard. We found out later that they had been pulled out of a window by their mother and a neighbor before the fire district had arrived. They were unconscious, unresponsive. Paramedics were trying to resuscitate them. There was a woman who was running hysterically about the front yard and trying to get to the boys and generally unintentionally interfering with the paramedics' efforts. It was later determined that this was the mother of the two boys. And it fell to me to basically restrain the woman, to try to get her to calm down, to try to let the paramedics do their work. It was eventually both boys and their mother were transported to local hospitals. One of the boys, 6 years old, was pronounced dead shortly after arriving at the hospital. The two-year-old child, to the best of my knowledge, is still alive, but has never regained consciousness some 8 years later. Investigators subsequently determined that the two boys had been left alone for a brief time while their mother picked up an older sibling at a local school. And during that time, evidence indicates that one or both boys played with a lighter left on a table in the front room of the home, a lighter that was designed to look like a dolphin, and that the younger boy in particular had a fascination with. Now, I tell this story here in a somewhat generic way with no names and no addresses because it understandably proved to be a major traumatic event in the life of this family. And I can tell you that it was certainly a major traumatic event for me. Those few minutes clutching that woman in the front yard, trying to think of what to say, rank for me very high in a career made up of emergencies and traumatic events. And I tell the story here this afternoon because it's important. You need to know that it did happen here, it does happen here, and it can happen here. One of the things you'll find out as you consider the issue of toy-like lighters is that there are no firm statistics as to how many fires in Oregon have been caused by children playing with these devices. And there's a simple reason for that. The standardized fire report form used in Oregon is a simple check-the-box, fill-in-the-blank type of form. It's designed for ease of use by professional firefighters in busy units in Oregon's major cities, as well as volunteers who serve their rural communities while earning their daily bread and other jobs. It's a form designed to capture basic data, allow fire managers to analyze trends, and identify areas worthy of public awareness efforts or legislative action. As it has for years, the form captures fires started by children playing with matches and lighters. The problem is that the last time the form underwent major revision, no one in the Oregon Fire Service expected that anyone would design and market cigarette lighters, tools intended for the use of adults, as devices attractive to children, as toy cars, cell phones, cameras, animals, rubber ducks, and even dolphins. Sadly, we know better now. Since I first testified before this committee in the legislative interim, I can tell you that we've now identified at least three fires in Oregon since 2000 directly attributable to novelty lighters, each of those fires having devastating consequences in terms of life or property loss. Further, we've documented at least one case in Astoria where a lighter designed to look like a handgun resulted in a police response when a witness mistook it for an actual firearm. And we're currently looking into a secondhand report of a similar incident in another Oregon community. To put it as simply as I can, some things are just bad ideas. And to those who would say it's up to parents to keep such items away from their children, I would ask if you would be so sanguine if we were talking about handguns that look like toys or drugs designed to look like candy. At this point, I would like to introduce Judy Okulich of the Oregon Office of State Fire Marshal, who has taken the point on this issue not only in Oregon, but has played a significant role nationally in bringing attention to this.
Thank you, Tim. Good afternoon, Chair Holby and members of the Consumer Protection Committee. My name is Judith Okulich, and I am the coordinator of an intervention program at the Office of State Fire Marshal. And I am here today to primarily provide you with some background and some historical information on the involvement of the Oregon Fire Service with the issue of novelty lighters, as well as the safety standard that relates to cigarette lighters in general. Before me are some examples of the very lighters that we are going to be talking about. And they are the lighters that have blinking lights in many cases. And Chair Hovey, you'll like this one particularly because it is a cell phone and it does actually ring. This one also looks very much like a cell phone that I carry in my purse. Many of these have lights, blinking lights. Many of them not only produce flames, but actually have very torch-like flames to them that are extremely, extremely high. I don't know if you can see that. This particular one, if we look at these little rubber ducks, I can tell you that two out of the three ducks are toys. One of them is a lighter, but you can see the similarities. If we look at two soccer ball whistles, one of them is a lighter, one of them is a toy. Both of them are whistles. If we look at the camera to my left, this one is one that is very attractive, and it has the immediate tendency to want to put it up to your eye, and yet it produces a very large flame. And then if you look at the three tractors to my left, two out of those three tractors are lighters, one is not. So for a very young child, as they look at the toy-like lighters before you and the toys, the ability for children to discriminate what is actually a fire tool and not a toy is very, very difficult, and that is what we are here to talk about today. What I would like to do at this point in time is to be able to show you a clip that was produced during Arson Awareness Week. Arson Awareness Week is sponsored by the United States Fire Administration. It's an annual event that occurs every year, and it helps to focus the public on the prevention of intentionally set fires. The theme for 2008 was toy-like lighters, literally playing with fire. KGW aired a story about the dangers of toy-like lighters here in Oregon, and I'd like to show you that clip as an example of what we're dealing with when these lighters are actually shown to children.
Yeah, they're novelty lighters that in the wrong hands can burn a whole lot more than a cigarette. This is National Arson Awareness Week, and those lighters are a major concern for Oregon fire officials. News Channel 8 consumer reporter Wayne Haverly investigates kid fire danger.
If a tool has a job, is that a tool?
Don't you hate it when technology doesn't do what you want?
Sure. Most young children are taught to stay away from matches and lighters.
Could this burn down our house?
Yes. You have to give them a lot of credit. They're pretty aware.
But even these kids don't know what to do when the lighters look like this.
Is that real cool? Yeah.
With the help of Jim Trett from the Kaiser Fire Department, we observed how these novelty lighters attract kids like moths to a flame.
What's that? A slug bug.
Don't worry, they won't fire up because we took out the butane. A good thing, because watch how this little boy quickly figures out the ignition button on the robot lighter.
Ooh,
frogs, Gumby, even. And there are lighters that appear to be toy cell phones.
To call somebody, you push the buttons.
Well, there's a lot of buttons to push and lights that open up, even headlights here. They sure look like toys. That is, until you hit the wrong button.
We run the real risk of kids being seriously hurt, if not killed, by these things. And and that just scares me to death.
Investigators say it was a motorcycle-shaped lighter like this that sparked a fire killing two children in Arkansas last year.
What we'd like to see really happen is have a national ban.
Oregon's Fire Marshal's Office is pushing for that ban. Several states and cities have already passed their own novelty lighter bans, but not Oregon. Investigators say they don't know how many fires are connected to these lighters because there was no reliable way to track them until a few months ago.
The National Reporting System has now instituted a category where you can report that it was actually a novelty or toy-like lighter that was the cause of the fire.
The European Union recently banned the lighters, which are mostly made in China. Now the U.S. is being flooded with them. We found them for sale in convenience stores all across Portland and Salem.
This also has a laser sighting.
Retailers who sold me the lighters point out they do not sell to minors. They say parents need to monitor their kids. Parents watching their kids in our demonstration had a different view.
I don't see a purpose other than scaring adults to death.
Parents need to be very, very aware and really think about bringing them into your house, because if they see you with them, you're basically telling a child, if I can play with it, you can.
And we all know when you play with fire, there are bound to be consequences. Wayne Haverly, KGW News Channel 8.
For more on novelty lighters, log on to KGW.com, click News, and then Special Reports. You'll find forms to report incidents involving toy lighters, lists of places that have banned them, and also a photo gallery of some of the lighters to look out for.
To give you a little bit of a history about it, in 1990, the Office of State Fire Marshal established an educational intervention program for youth misusing fire, or for using fire in dangerous and risky ways. Our mission is to develop a continuum of care for these youth, which includes prevention, intervention, and in some cases, treatment for the most serious kids. While there are many components of this continuum of care, one of the major components that we emphasize is the education about lighters. We have four major goals when we look at educating parents and caregivers about lighters. And they are, one, simply to reduce the accessibility of matches and lighters in homes and in our stores, to try and coordinate statewide campaigns to modify displays of disposable lighters that are in stores. And the third one, and this is the one that I think is very relevant for our hearing today, is to educate children that matches and lighters are tools for adults, not toys for children. You can see that for us in the fire service, that educational message is now really being challenged because we can no longer say that we're not seeing toy-like lighters. The last thing that we do in our office in terms of lighters is that we have worked to support the Consumer Product Safety Commission when they started to and eventually adopted a federal safety standard for cigarette lighters that would make them child resistant. That occurred in 1994. We were very pleased when the Consumer Product Safety Commission did successfully adopt a safety standard for lighters. What that essentially meant was that 85% of children under the age of 5 would not be able to work the mechanism on a cigarette lighter and thereby prevent that fire, that injury. However, what we certainly realized during that process is that the lighters became child resistant. They certainly were not child-proof, because we still had 15% of the kids in those test groups who were still able to use those lighters. Far more important, however, is just as we were making them child-resistant, we also made them adult-unfriendly. And so if you recall back in the early 90s, we had lighters that had little levers on them, and you had to literally move that lever in order to light the lighter. Well, what most smokers did, or people who were using those lighters, they basically would alter them. They'd take the mechanism out. They'd sabotage it. So the industry went back after that and designed another kind of mechanism, which is a wheel that is much wider, much stronger, and is much more resilient. And so, again, we continue to have that child-resistant cigarette lighter. It was back in 1997, then, that CPSC actually instituted a study to determine how effective was this legislation. And I am very proud to say that the Oregon Fire Service became part of a national study to look at that effectiveness of that safety standard. And what we concluded, and what was concluded, that 58%, there was a 58% reduction in cigarette lighter fires caused by children under the age of 5. Because of that safety standard. So that standard, no doubt, has reduced young child fire fatalities, injuries, and property loss. However, contained within that standard, the CPSC also defined the novelty lighter. And I'm going to read this to you because I think it points out very clearly what we're talking about today. That a novelty lighter, that we are now calling toy-like lighter, is any lighter that depicts or resembles articles commonly recognized as appealing or intended for use by children under the age of five, such as cartoon characters, toys, guns, watches, musical instruments, vehicles, toy animals, food, or beverage, all of which you see in front of you today. Novelty lighters are subject to the same child resistance standard, regardless of what their price is. So, in 1994, when this rule was adopted, lighters and novelty lighters were very, very simplistic. And I'd like to show you this lighter. This was a lighter that, working with our local CPSC investigators here in Oregon and the Office of State Fire Marshal, we were able to take off the market before Memorial Day weekend, where about 5,000 of these lighters would have hit the Oregon market. And basically, it was a cigarette lighter where they simply put a label on it, they glued some wheels, plastic wheels, and they turned it on its side in order to make it this truck-like lighter. Now, if I show you this lighter, and then I show you these kind of lighters that we see today, I truly believe that the commissioners at that time, 15 years ago, never realized that we would be manufacturing the kind of sophistication and technology in lighters that we see today. In 2002, the Consumer Product Safety Commission contracted with our office to conduct inspections of retail stores to determine if the novelty lighters that were being sold here in Oregon actually met that safety standard. So I was privileged to be able to inspect over 40 retail outlets all across the state to determine that effectiveness. And basically what that meant is I used a screening tool to determine what would be the strength on any one of these ignition plugs, and I would measure it with a particular device. What it meant was that if this device is worth 8 pounds or more, the theory was that a five-year-old would not have the thumb strength with which to operate this lighter. Okay? What really happened, however, is I went around Oregon and tested these, and I could have a box of 12 of these lighters. I might test one that actually perhaps did rate 12 pounds. I could test three or four more in that box of lighters, and none of them would meet the standards or would comply. And then some of them wouldn't even have fuel in them. So the quality control standards that we were operating on, if all we do is test one lighter, does not at all mean that all the lighters that are coming in that are novelty lighters actually are complying with that standard. One of the things that I realized also as I toured the state, and I would talk to retailers and I would explain that the dangers they pose to children, many of them would voluntarily take the lighters off the shelves and send them back to the distributors. However, 6 months later, I would go back into that store, management would change, and suddenly we would have another set of novelty lighters. The other thing I think that's extremely important as we look at the Consumer Product Safety Standard is that it really only applies to children under the age of five. If we look at the issue of children setting intentionally or unintentional set fires, it is a much bigger issue than that particular age group. We collect data at the Office of State Fire Marshal, and I can tell you that the majority of fires that are set by children in this state are not often the very young, but they are the children between the ages of 8 and 12. An 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old can certainly operate this lighter. I was in Columbia County. I was attending an affair. It was a safety fair. I had my lighter display there. And I had a 10-year-old who literally begged me to sell him one of these lighters. So the attraction for particularly 8 to 10 and 11-year-olds is just absolutely incredible when we see what children do and how intrigued they are with them. Novelty lighters are as attractive to adults as they are to children. Many of them cost anywhere between $4 to $7 to $10. And so the lighters are not necessarily being bought by children. They're being bought by parents or caregivers who are bringing them back into their home, never realizing really the dangers that they pose because, quite frankly, most people will say, gee, isn't this cute? And they pick it up without ever thinking the danger that it could pose when they bring it home to their young children. The other thing that we have done at the Office of State Fire Marshal is that we actually had the lighters tested for lead. And I know that you've been listening to a lot of information about toys that are being tested for lead. But I took this particular lighter, which is by all accounts the mascot of the fire service, the Dalmatian dog, and I had this little red helmet tested at a lab in Beaverton. And I can tell you that it tested over 4,000 parts per million. And as we just heard, the allowable lead content for toys is 600 parts per million. So many of these lighters are also coming in with extremely high lead contents. In 2002, I noticed that the sophistication of the manufacturing of these lighters and the marketing of the lighters in Oregon was starting to expand. And so at the Office of State Fire Marshal, we published a publication that's called Hot Issues. It is a publication that goes out throughout the country, and we did a photo gallery of many of these lighters. What ended up happening with that publication is that we placed Oregon in a leadership role as someone and as a fire service that was concerned about lighters, was concerned about children and families, and we have literally rallied the fire service across the nation to educate their parents and caregivers, but more importantly, to also start to adopt city, county, and local bans prohibiting the sale of lighters in their communities. So, in conclusion, where are we today? The European Union, in March of 2007, adopted the Federal Safety Cigarette Standard. And that is very, very significant because in the adoption of that standard, they also included the ban of novelty lighters in the European Union. The big corporation, when I spoke with them, estimates that as many as 70 million lighters could now find their way into the American marketplace as a result. In conclusion, I'd simply like to quote our retired state fire marshal, who said it very simply, but I think who said it very well. There is really simply no good reason to take a hazardous material, a flammable liquid, and to place it in a toy-like container that puts our children and families at risk. These lighters children will find attractive, they invite unintentional misuse, and they place them, their families, and our communities at risk for fire.
Chair Hovey and committee members, for the record, Randy Simpson, Acting State Fire Marshal. I'm going to testify about a fire that happened in June of 2003 in northeastern Oregon in the Umatilla Rural Fire Protection District. This is a very small volunteer fire district with one paid officer, the chief. It's 35 square miles they cover, and they receive assistance from Aragon and Hermiston Fire. Back in June, we had received a call for assistance for a fire investigation that had occurred at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This fire, pictures are in your testimony also, or in my testimony for copies for you, but this fire occurred with a 13-year-old babysitting three small children and one 18-year-old cerebral palsy child living there also. And during this fire, this 13-year-old babysitter was able to evacuate the three small children and the 18-year-old. There were injuries to the 18-year-old from having to have to drag her out of this residence. It was a single-story residence out, again, in rural eastern Oregon. And the fire department did a phenomenal job. They held the fire to severe damage to the bedroom and living room, but the whole home received extensive damage from heat and smoke throughout. Also, this fire could have led to several fatalities very easily. I can't emphasize that enough. Having a 13-year-old watching three small children and the one 18-year-old with cerebral palsy. They did a heroic act of getting all of them out. The issue here, the deputy arrived and assisted the fire department in the fire investigation. And what they found was this lighter that looks like a horse that a 4-year-old was playing with that lit his teddy bear on fire in the bedroom. So he was in the back bedroom without supervision while the rest of the babysitter and family were in the rest of the house. And it's out now at this time, but this lighter produces the blue torch flame effect that reaches temperatures of 2,400 degrees Fahrenheit. So you can see the intense fire that came out of this. Very hard to see on a bright day. And again, this was in June in Eastern Oregon, and it was bright and sunny that day. So it's phenomenal to me that we did not have fatalities at this fire. The bill is going to protect our children from the unintentional use of fire. It's going to protect our families and our communities. This bill will have minimal impact to the Office of State Fire Marshal, current staff. We can work with the industry. We can work with retailers. We're doing it with the Safer Cigarette Program of last session, and we can continue with this program. And we urge for your favorable consideration of this bill. And I thank you for your time to hear our testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Very riveting, and my heart goes out to those that have been involved in answering fires situations, especially where you have extreme situations on your hands and death and serious injury. Just really tough to deal with, tough to even think about. Questions from the committee or comments? Representative Widener.
Just a quick question for you. Do you know how many? Because I think it's 2,000. You said there's been two fires with the lighters, but I'm just wondering how many fires have been started with lighters, matches, and other items. If you have any of those numbers with your statistics.
If we look over a 5-year period of time, about 67% of all fires that are started by youth involve a lighter as opposed to matches.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. I'd like to commend everybody for your efforts. Thank you very much. As some of you know, I am a firefighter in the city of Gresham. Serve as a lieutenant there. And, firefighters, as Tim said, not to get specific, but we've had the opportunity to respond to some of these calls that were very unfortunate. And I can give you specifics. I won't do that on record. But there are two kids in my mind, as you're talking, that were responsible for their own demise. And it's very unfortunate when we roll up as firefighters, whether it's a mobile home or a two-story home or large-scale property, it doesn't matter. To know it was preventable is the big issue. This is one of those cogs on the wheel that we absolutely have to, that we have to go after. And the reason why is juvenile firefighters are a big problem for all of us. It impacts the lives of the children, impacts the lives of the family, and impacts the lives of everybody in that community. When we lose the life of a child or a family, it's absolutely inexcusable when we can link it to something like this. So my point is I commend the efforts of all the firefighters in the State Fire Marshal's Office for taking this so seriously. It does frustrate me that somebody would think it's okay as long as somebody is 5 years old and they could do it, but below that it's okay. I have an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and the 3-year-old's capable of turning on a TV, starting the Wii game, and bowling a line like you wouldn't believe. So I would just tell you that what we need to do, I believe, is obviously support you. I can tell you that I'm appalled at business that thinks they should profit off of this. And in the interest of course, of juvenile firefighters and fire safety, we have to get to the bigger issue, and you're working on that. But this certainly helps us get started in that, and it takes the temptation away from these children. So good for you. Thanks for your efforts, and thanks for being here today. I really appreciate your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I commend the firefighters for their work. I have some sense, having done some reporting in a prior period of my life and some ride-alongs of what you guys do, and I'm very grateful. I'd like to get back to this question of statistics. You said that 66% were involved lighters, but I'm wondering just in straight numbers, how many youth-involved fires we have in a given year or some period of time?
Chair Holvey, Representative Wingard, we have been collecting data at the State Fire Marshal's Office for over 10 years, and so we can range anywhere between 700 and 800 fires per year, up to 1,500 to 1,600 fires per year that are actually reported to the Office of State Fire Marshal. However, what we realize is by the time that a report actually comes to the State Fire Marshal's Office, a child may have set anywhere between 3 and 10 fires that have been put out by someone else and not reported to us as either having gotten out of control or that the parents are bringing the child to the fire department. So those numbers are very, very low. We know that they're certainly much higher because we can gather that data as we do our interviews with parents and children.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
So of that 700 to 1,500, what percentage of those involve children using lighters?
Chair Holvey, Representative Wingard, what we are seeing happen over the last 10 years is that the use of lighters is much more prevalent than it was even 5 years ago. So as we begin to look at it, we're seeing as much as 60% of the fires that are set by the youth are using lighters as opposed to matches or other kinds of ignition sources.
Just one final comment, Mr. Chair. I've been involved in a few consumer-related issues in my life, but I've never seen anything as stupid as this. The sheer volume of these items, and I agree with your sentiment that I cannot for the life of me think of why you would take something so hazardous and market it as a toy. So I appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also appreciate the fact that you've gathered all this information over the years and brought it to us. And I'm not really concerned about what percentage it is. 1% or any is too much as far as I'm concerned. And these type of things are very alluring to kids. I could put hooks on them, use them for bass. I can see that. And outlawing these things is going to make a much safer world as far as I'm concerned for everybody and even for Representative Gilliam.
Well, opened it up for me. any other comment? Representative Cowan.
Well, I've just been looking at those and thinking about the way they work. It's a fascinating display. Thank you for bringing them. Fire starting with one of those is a matter of playing with it and then a fire starting. I can see that happening, but the size of the flame that some of them produce, as you were indicating, do you get reports? Does anybody keep reports of injuries that might have occurred from that? I mean, I'm thinking how easy it would be to light one's clothing or fire or your hair, eyebrows, several things on fire with the size of the flame of one of those, on top of the fire potential of starting a house fire.
Chair Holvey, Representative Cowan, we actually have a representative from the Oregon Burn Center who is going to be testifying to that effect and to the kinds of burn injuries that they're seeing at the center or what might be possible in other hospitals or clinics in this state. So I'll defer to her.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. I've just given you a great lead-in for that.
Absolutely. Thank you, committee. I don't see any other comments. My only regret is Oregon didn't act on this sooner. Ever since you've talked to me about this last February when we were doing our children products bill, I've been thinking about this issue and hoping that our slow pace at doing something about it didn't result in somebody else's life. So I commend you and also want to recognize Donna Dish from the State Fire Marshal's Office, the former State Fire Marshal, and their efforts on this. And certainly you, Judy, it's a remarkable effort that you've been doing and the State Fire Marshal's Office in general. So thank you very much. And with that testimony and
Representative Cowan's lead in, I'd like to call up Kirsten Balding and Dr. Tim Copette.
I'd hate to be not in the cigarette with
Thank you very much for coming this afternoon, and before you speak, if you could identify yourself for the record, a formality that we must stick to. Thank you.
My name's Dr. Tim Copette. I'm a psychologist, and my address is 7505 Southwest Bevland in Tigard.
My name is Kirsten Balding. I'm a registered nurse and the education and outreach coordinator for the Oregon Burn Center. I reside at 4807 Southwest X-Row Avenue in Redmond, Oregon.
Thank you. And it sounds like you've testified in front of city councils and things where they ask for your address, and we don't require that here. But anyway, please proceed.
I'll go ahead and go first. I'm here to offer my support for House Bill 2365. As I said, I'm a clinical psychologist. I specialize in working with children, adolescents, and youth with special needs. I'm also the administrator for a federally funded program called Fire Safe Children and Families, which works out of the Portland metro area. And our focus and mission is to provide early intervention services, intervention services for children who misuse fire. I've been working with youth who've misused fire for over 15 years, and there are a couple things that concern me about the. There are many things that concern me about these lighters. I brought my own too. So, first of all, on a child development level, these lighters present a pretty significant problem. Children, young children especially, learn by imitating, by exploring, by playing, and I think these lighters really give mixed messages about what's a toy and what's a tool. We really want to teach children that difference about what's a tool and what's a toy, and I think it's very confusing when you look at something like these lighters. The other thing is also on a developmental level is also getting adults to think about the impact. I had a interaction with a teacher recently, a colleague of mine, great teacher, very thoughtful, and I mentioned that I was coming down here to testify, and she went white in the face, and she had kind of like, uh-oh. And she told me then, during the holidays, she'd purchased a couple of lighters, novelty lighters like this, and bought them for friends of hers, not realizing that she's just given a potentially dangerous thing to a family that has children. So she thought they were very cute. I think adults, the lack of awareness by adults is a significant issue, too. I work a lot with special needs children, children with emotional, behavioral, and developmental issues, a lot of children with autism and Asperger's disorders. Looking at things like this, you know, a lighter that's like Porky Pig here, that's pretty confusing to a normal or a child without a disability, but to a child with a disability, I think it even makes it's more complicated. The other difficulty is that we use these kinds of toys in therapy with children, and so those are things that they had learned were something that was safe for them to use, and now it's something that isn't safe. So I think when we look at special needs children, I think it just added another layer of complexity that makes it more confusing and more likely that we're going to have a problem. Finally, I also work a lot with children who have misused fire and have a history of that. And their parents come to me and they're frantic. They've tried everything to try it. And these are children who are fascinated with fire. And it's very concerning to develop, you know, interventions and therapy that's going to help them be safe. It doesn't help when then they see these kinds of toys, and they really look like toys to them. that are really quite dangerous. It adds to the fascination. So those are my big concerns. A couple other pieces of data I wanted to throw out, though, is that in Oregon as well as nationally, approximately 50% of all arson arrests are by children. And that's pretty significant. It's the only FBI indexed crime that has more children committing it than adults. And we need all the help we can get in terms of helping reduce that. Our Fire Safe Children and Family Program has, we have individualized services as well as group services, and we're teaching children, you know, the tools and toys concept, but many other things that go along with it based on what their needs are, and I think supporting this ban on these lighters would really make things easier for us, and I think in terms of protecting kids. Our program served last year about 250 kids, and about 250 the year before that. So we're hopeful to keep moving along here. So so thank you for your consideration and your support.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Again, my name is Kirsten Balding, and I am here to speak on behalf of the Oregon Burn Center. As you can imagine, we have a unique view on why we would like to see this law passed, or this bill passed into effect. The Oregon Burn Center, just to give you a little bit of background, has five tenets that we must adhere to as part of a national facility that works for the burn centers nationwide. And those tenets are teaching, caring, research, rehabilitation, and prevention. And so one of the things that we do each year is we go out all throughout the state and we teach at least 140 classes a year on burn prevention and burn education, care and treatment of burn injuries. And this is one of the things that we tend to talk about quite often, is how we can prevent any kind of burn injury from occurring in our children in our houses. We treat approximately 400 patients per year with severe burn injuries, and I always like to help people understand what I would consider a severe burn injury. Burn injuries are something that we can all relate to. You've probably all had your finger on the stove and gotten a nice little blister there. What I consider a severe burn injury is any burn injury greater than 10% of your body. 10% is the size of one arm, so 10% of your body. We treat burn injuries up to 90 to 95% of our body, and that's basically from the top of your chin down to your toes, 90 to 95% of your body. Those are the most common burn injuries that we see. There are two components that we consider when we see any burn injury in our facility, and that's that they have two factors in common. First of all is that you can imagine these injuries are devastating, not only to the person who's received them, but usually to their entire family. And we consider 90% of the injuries that we treat at the Oregon Burn Center to be completely preventable. So with that in mind, toy-like lighters are, of course, one of those injuries that we would consider a preventable injury. This particular lighter that I'm holding in my hand here was an actual injury that was treated in our facility. A little boy who I believe was 2.5 at the time ignited this lighter and lit the bed that his mom was laying in, lit the blankets on fire, causing her feet to receive severe third-degree burns, or full-thickness injuries, we call them. The fire was put out. She was in our facility for about 8 weeks, had several surgeries, and then was able to go home. Being cared for at a burn center is a long, long process, and just to put it in context for you, when you go into a hospital for open heart surgery, you usually stay in a hospital for 1 week. When you come into a burn center, you can plan to be with us for at least 2 to 6 weeks, and our longest stay is on record is 9 months. So it's a long, long, long process, and of course then it takes years to rehabilitate after that. So it just gives you an idea of how we treat our injuries and the injuries that we see. One of the questions that came up earlier was, what do you see at a burn center? And to be totally honest, these, again, just like in the fire service, are very hard to track. Many times a child will come to us and we know that a lighter has been involved. We don't know that it's a toy-like lighter or a novelty lighter. We also know at the Oregon Burn Center that we treat the worst of the worst. So we're going to be seeing the most severe injuries. We know that in addition to the injuries we treat, there are at least 1,000 burn injuries in children that are treated in emergency departments across the state and then released back home to their parents. They're not severe enough to stay in a hospital setting, but they are severe enough to be seen at a hospital facility. Then they may need follow-up for rehabilitation, for therapy, for surgery, skin grafting, whatnot. In addition to that, we know that there are usually several thousand children each year that may suffer what a parent would consider a minor burn, that burned just a small finger and maybe just a half of a hand. They do not come in for medical attention, but they do receive a severe burn injury. So we may not be able to track those, but we know that they are out there. And the last thing I'd like to leave you with is that we consider the burn injuries that we see and even the ones that we don't, they are just an instant away from becoming a severe burn injury. It just is a matter of seconds before a fire spreads so far that a child can't get out of a burning building. We know that, again, as we were talking about earlier, just flicking the switch and having it singe off an eyebrow, things like that, that's just one instant away from having a severe burn injury over more parts of our body, depending on if we run while we're on fire, depending on the clothing that we're wearing, all of those factors consider in. So with that in mind, the Oregon Burn Center is in full support of this bill, and we always will work to prevent even just one severe burn injury if we possibly can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're running just a little bit behind here. Do we have a question specific to this panel?
When are we having a work session on this, Mr. Chair?
Very soon.
Good.
So, I really appreciate you coming forward and giving us your perspective on this. Really important. Thank you very much. And I've got several more people lined up for testimony. I'm going to try to ask you to be brief with your comments, because I'd like everybody to get a chance to say something about this. If you have written testimony, it's great to hand it in, but don't read it to us. You can summarize. So next, I'd like to have Sandra Johnson and Trevor Steele, please. Thank you, and if you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, I'm Trevor Steele with the City of Eugene, and I have Sandra Johnston, our Deputy Fire Marshal.
Deputy Fire Marshal with the City of Eugene.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Chair Holvey and members of the committee, the City of Eugene supports House Bill 2365, which will reduce unintentional fires and injuries to children caused by novelty lighters. This is an issue of serious concern to all emergency service personnel, healthcare professionals, and the general public. As you can see, these novelty lighters look remarkably like toys that children find familiar. The toy-like qualities of these lighters hide the fact that they're lighters and they're enticing to children. In Eugene, staff from the Fire Marshal's office have found these lighters at a number of stores, even stores such as Goodwill. They are marketed lower on store shelves and are likely to attract the attention of children. To make matters worse, as you have heard, these novelty lighters do not have the safety features of traditional lighters, making them easier to light accidentally. In 2004, a mother in Eugene was severely burned when her 2.5-year-old climbed to the top of a dresser and got a hold of a novelty lighter that looked like a Christmas tree. In fact, it was this lighter. These lighters are already prohibited in several states and localities across the nation because they're inherently dangerous in nature. This House bill would prevent devastating and unnecessary tragedies that we've already experienced. The City of Eugene urges the committee to support this House bill 2365 with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further comments?
We're happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
I think that we have probably don't have any for you right now. I think we kind of have our minds made up right now, so it's just going to be a matter of making a decision down the road. Thank you very much for your testimony and your conciseness. Next up, I'd like to have Lucy Drum and Adrian Green, please. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record, if you would.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Adrian Green. I'm with Oregon Public Health Division.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Lucy Drum, and I'm with Safe Kids Portland Metro and American Medical Response.
Welcome.
Thank you. Just a couple things, since you've already heard most of everything that's already been said, just to let you know that Oregon Public Health Division does support this bill and encourages you to pass it. A little bit of information you might not have is that the leading cause of death to children in our state under the age of 14 is unintentional injuries. In a five-year time period, 2002 through 2006, there were 18 children who did die, and another 192 were hospitalized due to burns from fires. Just a little added bit of information. We do think that designing lighters and shapes that will encourage children to reach for and play with them may increase this hazard. That's kind of the short version of the testimony. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, as the Safe Kids Coordinator for Portland Metro, I lead a coalition of about 25 to 30 partners who are dedicated to children's injury prevention. These coalitions are chapters are throughout the state of Oregon, and Safe Kids is the only national organization that's dedicated to children's injury prevention ages 0 to 14. They are very much in support of banning toy-like or novelty lighters. As an educator, I try to teach children how to stay away from harm. As you've clearly seen, it's very difficult to do that when the item of harm really looks like a toy and something that obviously attracts children. As an EMS provider for many years, I have witnessed firsthand the severe trauma, pain that children suffer when they have incurred burns, as well as the trauma and emotional impact on the parents and caregivers. Safe Kids estimates, as long as we're all talking about the cost of injuries and the trauma, Safe Kids Injuries estimates the cost of child injury deaths in the United States to be $34 billion annually. Injury prevention efforts are very important. Burn injuries are one of the leading causes of those unintentional deaths. In the Portland metropolitan area alone, about a dozen children under the age of five are hospitalized every year with burn injuries. Injuries due to fires and burns are preventable. They're painful, they are expensive, and they can be terribly disabling and disfiguring. So I really encourage you to vote yes on House Bill 2365. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward and offering your testimony. Appreciate it. I don't know that the panel has any questions. Doesn't appear that we have any questions anymore. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next up, I'd like to have Tatum Sparks and Dr. Mary Pat Brooks. Perhaps the coolest testimony I've ever had.
Straight from the heart.
Please introduce yourself for our records, and you can begin your testimony.
My name is Tatum Sparks.
Welcome, Tatum.
Thank you.
You may begin.
I support HB 23654 for the following reasons. I think toy lighters should not be sold at stores because I don't want anybody to get hurt or anyone's house to burn down. It's hard for children to know which are toys and which ones are lighters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I wish my staff's penmanship was as good as yours.
You made the comment before I was going to.
Thank you.
Beat me to it.
Where is the TV camera when we need it?
Oh, thank you so much. Doctor, do you wish to provide us any testimony?
I do. Thank you so much, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. My name is Mary Pat Brooks, and I'm the principal at St. Joseph Catholic School, which is just two blocks away from you to the north. And, you know, Tatum was the one that really brought my attention to the novelty lighters. And I actually went through my house and found that I possess a novelty lighter and didn't even think about it. I took this lighter to school and had a couple, and has no flame in it, just for the record. Took this lighter to school and had some children try it, and they thought it was really a neat toy. And then when I told them it was actually a lighter, they were very surprised, as were the parents that I showed it to today. They had no idea. So I think what I would like to really instill upon all of you is that we don't have enough knowledge about novelty lighters. Parents don't. Schools don't. So maybe more information that gets out just specifically to the schools, more information specifically to the parents, so they are aware of this. I grew up with a younger brother who we used to call a pyromaniac. He'll be so glad that this is on record. But, you know, he loved to start fires all the time, and I stop and think about what fun he would have if he would have had one of these toy lighters that are in front of me. He could have concealed them from my parents. He could have concealed them from teachers. He could have brought them to school. No one would have known that this was a lighter instead of just being a toy. And I also question the fact, I travel back and forth to the airport a lot, how many children carry these toy novelty lighters in their toy bags when they go through the airport? I just wondered if anybody ever checked that, if it showed up. I just didn't know. We have to do all we can to protect our children, and that really includes educating them and also educating their parents about the dangers of fire. And I really question what the manufacturers and the sales representatives' thoughts were when they put these products into the hands of young children, because you know a child will go right to it and will pick it up. So, members of the committee, thank you so much for your interest in all of this. And remember tonight, after you go to bed, our children will have already been kissed by their parents. They will already be sleeping. And when you have a minute to stop and think about Tatum's testimony today and the other people who testified today, know that you have really are starting to create a safe environment for all of our children in Oregon. And I applaud you for all of that. And thank you so much.
Thank you. I applaud you for being proactive with your students, and your care shows through with that. And Tatum, thank you for your testimony. It's very helpful and very encouraging to see somebody's paying attention.
You're welcome.
Further comments, Representative Widener?
Now I got the tough questions. So I think everybody here today pretty much knows that the lighters are a bad idea. But having a burn victim here, and after speaking last Saturday, I had a good friend of mine who actually did catch on fire, and over 45% of his body was burned, and he passed away, and I spoke at his funeral last week. There's a lot more issues than lighters that we need to be looking at for burns and safety. So there's lots of issues out there that we need to address, more so than just these lighters. As you're sitting here, and I got a bunch of firemen here, these are things you need to look at and address when you're in the field. That's why I was asking for specific numbers, because one is too many. But we still have to have figures, because we have to know there was one that caused it. And these are issues that you guys need to do when you're doing your investigation and get back to us so we know what's going, so we can make the changes we need to save people's lives.
Thank you. Representative Matthews.
Chair Holby, I'll be quick. Thank you. Just in response to that, too, and I can certainly appreciate the comment, but we also have to realize that our communities are struggling. A lot of folks are, and some of those first cuts they're making are in the prevention division. So it is absolutely critical that we do our best to make sure that the resources are available for us to educate our community. And whether there's a funding mechanism in place, we'll talk about later in fines and whatnot, that will come back to assist our firefighters, that's what we need to do. Because I can tell you right now, nobody wants to prevent these injuries more than the firefighters, and including Tatum, I'm sure, too. So I will say that, you know, you'll often hear, if it's predictable, it's preventable. Well, I predict that if something's not done and we don't get aggressive in not only this component but the education piece that goes with fire prevention, we are going to suffer more injuries and deaths, and they're going to be very serious and critical to every community. So thank you, Chair Holby, for giving me the time, and thanks again for all the effort. And Tatum, you should be very proud of yourself today. Good for you. Nice job.
Thank you. And I will comment that I have seen TV commercials, I believe from the Oregon State Fire Marshal, on novelty lighters warning parents of the dangers of these products. So I commend them for that, a great step to take until the slow process of the legislature does, you know, take this to fruition and get rid of these things. So thank you so much, Tatum and Doctor. Really appreciate you coming forward. It's really refreshing to see somebody so young engaged in this process to do something right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Holby and Committee.
Next up, I'd like to have John Klum, and joined by Steve Schneiderman with... Okay, I'll just stop right there. Hopefully I didn't butcher your names. If I did, I apologize.
Usually mess mine up. I'm John Klum, Fire Chief, Portland, City of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair Holby, and the rest of the CPC committee, for giving me a brief moment to voice my support and the rest of the City of Portland's support for House Bill 2365. The testimony that you heard today and some of the technical experts have before you, you've heard the crux of what the significant issue is. But one of the key points I'd like to emphasize is what Representative Callen brought up to attention, is that these particular devices are appealing to all children. They're not just appealing to the individuals that have the fascination for fire, and that even presents a greater risk to our youth and our community. And the efforts that we have in the fire service, it's easy for us to quantify what has occurred, and it's very difficult to quantify what hasn't occurred. And in that, that's the importance of the public education component of each fire service agency before you today. And doing this, your work of passing this bill, gives us a valuable tool to prevent significant injuries to the youth in our society, and I appreciate the time today before you.
Thank you. Please go ahead and identify yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holby, member of the committee, thank you for allowing us to be here today. My name is Steve Schneiderman, and I'm going to keep this very brief for you because I really appreciate you taking Friday afternoon to hear this. I started my fire service career as a volunteer in Coos Bay 27 years ago and spent 25 years all volunteer as an active firefighter in the Coos Bay area. I served as president of the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, approximately 8,000 members, approximately 8,000 volunteer firefighters in the state. Most of the state is covered by all-volunteer or combination fire departments. When I started my fire service career 27 years ago, my fire chief, Andy Anderson, taught me how to put out a fire. He said, if it's a small fire, grab that small hose up on the fire truck and spread the water on the fire. If it's a big fire, grab that bigger hose and spray more water on the fire. Then I started taking more classes, and then I learned about the National Fire Academy in Emmitsburg, Maryland. I attended and graduated from 8 classes at the National Fire Academy, one being a class that taught me how to command firefighters. Another class taught me how to investigate fires. Another class taught me how to teach firefighters about firefighting. Several others along the way, and then the last class I took, probably the most impactful class that I took at the National Fire Academy, taught me the best way to put out a fire. The class was called Changing America's Family at Risk, and it taught us the easiest way to put out a fire is to prevent it from ever having started. And that's what we're really here today to talk about is preventing these fires from ever starting, preventing these kids from getting hurt themselves, hurting others with these lighters that are made to look like toys. I can't think of a single firefighter that wouldn't run into a burning house to rescue a child, a parent, anybody. But I can tell you, every firefighter would rather not have to do that if we can just keep that fire from ever starting. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I really appreciate you coming forward and voicing your support for this. I really, really do. And that goes out to everybody that's here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, I'd like to have Lori Wimmer and Tricia Yates, and perhaps Ralph Groner can join them. If that's okay with the ladies. Should have asked that first,
yeah,
probably.
We should have asked about Ralph being up there.
Thank you so much. Introduce yourself for the record and jump right in.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and members. I'm Tricia Yates, Associate Executive Director of the Oregon School Boards Association. We represent the state's 1,400 volunteer elected board leaders around the state. Here to support House Bill 2365 on behalf of one of our members, Mr. Jim Duff, who's an Oregon Trail School Board member. He's worked diligently as part of the coalition that you've heard from today in support of this bill. Jim could not be here today, and so we're here to say you for a great testimony about why I would echo what Tatum Sparks said about the need for the bill, and we're here to be supportive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer with the Oregon Education Association, and I won't take up a lot of your time. We just want to make sure that you know that the Oregon Education Association, too, and its 48,000 members care about this bill and hope that you'll pass it. And we also had a member who was very active in the work on this bill and asked us to come forward. She would have been here herself if she could have gotten out of the classroom, but she can't, so I'm batting cleanup for her. So thank you.
Thank her for us. And we haven't had any testimony against this bill, so...
No, but I want, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I won't take under a minute. I do want to answer a question I feel necessary by the new representative. My name is Ralph Groner with ASP. I thank Judy Okolich, one of our members, and our members of the Fire Marshal, as well as BPST and investigative unions, which are our union. I would like to say, however, for the edification primarily of new members, that this is not a lone issue. The fact is we started our union with the fire districts that are here and a team between management and labor some years ago before some of you came here with the fire insurance premium tax, which provided the money for the education for BPST to train both our volunteer members and new members. It also provides our fire prevention programs in the schools. All of that comes from the first program, which was fire insurance premium tax. You all pay on your home. Secondly, we came in last session, the entire coalition, and thank you for your help, with the Fire Safe Cigarette campaign, which, by the way, if you add those two alone without this measure and Judy Okolich's work and all of the work that's going on in Phase 3, it has saved significant amount of lives. And if you look at this in isolation, you'll see this, but if you'll see the picture of all the groups working together, it's going to where lives have been saved on a significant number. We will be back, I promise you, next session with another life-saving measure from our members and all of these who are in fire districts and the fire marshal. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and I appreciate the support that everyone has voiced. Thank you very much. Colleagues, that is the end of our testimony. Had no one come forward in opposition to this bill. My intention is to move this to a work session as soon as we can get the paperwork done. I would like your input, though, as far as taking a look at this bill. Not that it isn't a very good draft, but and I want to check back with the Fire Marshal's office, especially around the penalty phases of this bill, to see that this is stringent enough to get the job done. I believe it is, but please put a set of eyes on the actual language of the bill, and perhaps you can get back to me on any thoughts for improving the bill would be helpful, so we can expedite this bill through, and hopefully in time to prevent another fire. Any other comments from the committee? Representative Gilliam, you've been obviously quiet today. A thought.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tomei is eager to stay longer, and I just want to say quickly that the thing that impresses me about this testimony is the leverage we can get out of this. This is a no-brainer, we know that, for education. So I want to commend you, particularly Judith, and I want to commend you, Mr. Chair, for not only bringing it up in the interim, but having this forum again. And I think passage should be another opportunity, because to me, your continuum of education is the key here. I love what you said about prevention, and that's what we want to do. We want to leverage the information, the sexiness of the issue, and we want parents to be involved in waking up to some of the problems in their home, not just for these, but for the other areas. So let's leverage this. I again, Mr. Chair, thank you. Good work, and we are all on board.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam. Well said. And again, my hat is off to the State Fire Marshal's Office. It's been an ongoing issue for them, and thank you for your diligence in pursuing this matter and bringing it to my attention. And we'll see what we can do about getting this done. Thank you very much. Committee members, Monday. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill, whatever it was, 2365. Monday, we have an informational meeting on mortgage lending and foreclosure issues. And we will have a public hearing on one of these bills, 2188, 2189, that's listed. We will not be hearing, and we will have a revision come out on that probably Monday, I would assume. So with that, it will be a relatively full meeting, really important issue. And thank you very much for your patience on a Friday afternoon.
Thank you.
With that, I adjourn the House Committee on